Welcome to Remember When We, tales of difficulty, hope, joy, and a lifelong friendship. Each episode, we'll be making our way through the ever-increasing list of things that just aren't talked about enough. We'll share our own experiences, how our relationship impacted them, and vice versa. Think of it as an invitation to listen in on someone else's phone call, which is exactly what it is.
Where did you, what did you say?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, it just took ages to get.
Oh.
Wow.
Today. You're dropping out.
God's sake.
Oh, no.
Maybe that's just what you sound like when you're hungover.
You can't string a sentence together.
Glitching.
Oh, it's freezing in here. Fez, can we have the heating on just for a little bit, please? I have got a jumper on.
So how are you feeling, Ham?
I'm quite tired and, yeah, a bit hungover, really.
We drank a lot of Prosecco. And then the host was bringing me ouzo.
Ouzo.
Yeah, he's like, ouzo for the birthday girl. I was like, oh, no,
you drink it.
Yes, of course I drank it. It's peer pressure, isn't it?
Everyone was watching you.
Honestly, yeah.
Everyone was watching
me. I like ouzo now.
No, I had to drink two quite large shots.
Gets you so hungover, though.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I add a bit of ice and water to mine and drink it as a longer drink.
I didn't really have that option because everyone was watching and I was told to down it in one. So I think if I'd added ice and put it in a big glass and sipped it, it may not have had quite the same entertainment effect. Still going.
Who were the other two ladies that I didn't
recognize?
You sensed a slight hint of jealousy in my voice there.
And who are these other people that you claim to be friends with? So happens when you leave the country, leave me all alone, forced to make other friends.
Okay, so Han, start with where you are in the world, what time it is.
So I am in Lippock, Hampshire, in the UK, and the time now is 11:24 in the morning on a Sunday.
Okay, Gail?
I am in Adelaide, South Australia, and it is currently 5 to 10 in the evening on Sunday night.
And I am in Wichita, Kansas, in the States, and it is 6:25 Sunday morning. So we are all on a Sunday.
Yeah, so we're all on the same day today. Yeah.
That doesn't always happen.
This is the only way to do it, because our time range goes up to 16 and a half hour span.
Yeah, that's between you and me, isn't it? It still sounds crazy, doesn't it? It's such a long time.
It is. Yeah.
So for people wondering, why don't they talk very often, the three of us? That's why.
It's always someone's nighttime or very early morning.
But the good thing is there's always somebody up.
Yes.
So if you're happy, if you need to talk to someone at any given time, there's always,
someone around.
Yeah.
And usually you wake up in the morning, the other two that have been awake have been chatting. So there's always messages to wake up to.
Something to catch up on.
So this could be a very long discussion because it's really the genesis of this podcast and where this came from.
Yeah.
And it's also a major part of the identity of our friendship in this era is that we are living in three different corners of the world. Talk us through the decision and the process and why you moved.
So the reason I moved, I met my husband, Jeff, who was living in England at the time, but he was from Australia. And, you know, we got together, we were together for a number of years, living in England together, got married in England. But we'd always talked about it would be fun to live in Australia, wouldn't it? And I'd obviously, since being in a relationship with Jeff, we'd had lots of holidays to Australia and, you know, just got a feel for the place and, you know, thought it would be an adventure. But I always knew it would be hard, but that I would just have to be brave and leap into it if I wanted to do it. And just accept all the hard stuff that came with it. And so we did it in 2016.
Correct.
Is that right, Emily? Thank you. I knew you'd chip in if I got it wrong. Yeah, we came out, but with no plans. Like, we didn't have anywhere to live. We had planned to travel. You know, we got ourselves a car and a caravan, and we did that for sort of 9 or 10 months. During that time, of course, I got pregnant with Audrey, and then we thought we better settle down somewhere. And we'd had Adelaide in the back of our heads. We really liked it when we visited. And, you know, it was a city, a state capital, but not a huge one. And property prices weren't as big and crazy as they are in Melbourne and Sydney. And we just liked the lifestyle near the beach, near the hills.
And it's a comfortable distance from Jeff's family, right?
It's like a 4.5 hour drive or something. So we can go there for a long weekend. You know, that's like a drop in the ocean, of course, when you're driving around Australia. Like 4 hours, that's easy. Mm. Same as in America, isn't it? 4 hours, you don't think twice about doing that for a weekend. Yeah.
I know, and that's crazy because you would never do that here.
I know.
And that's a week's holiday, isn't it? It's...
Yeah, you do it for a week, but you for a weekend, would you? So yeah, then so we settled down. Where did I get to in my story? Yeah, we settled down in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And that's why I live here.
How often do you come back?
So my aim, this is how I kind of reconciled with it in my head, was that I'd always aim to visit once a year.
Yes.
So that makes it easier. And the fact that my parents come out to visit like pretty regularly, which is amazing. I'm so grateful that they're able to travel and that they're keen to travel and come stay for good chunks of time is incredible. Like, they'll come out for sort of 4 weeks minimum. But it's great. They just come and stay and just slot into our lives. And, yeah, it's amazing. And then they're so involved, and the girls, and drop-offs and pick-ups and mealtimes and household stuff. Like, they're just, you know, just here.
And do you feel like Australia is now your home, like that? Or is it never say never?
That's a really hard question. Mm. I don't think I would ever say this is fully my home ever, even though I'm comfortable here.
Yeah.
I enjoy living here. Like,
yeah.
Adelaide's a great city to live in. It's a great place to bring up kids. We love, you know, being a 15-minute drive to the beach. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would ever be able to call somewhere else home.
Mm.
I'll always feel like England's home. But then when I visit England, I also feel totally out of the loop.
Yeah.
Like, oh, everything's changed. Yeah, I do. I do. I feel like I'm sort of 10 years behind everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I try to keep you as up to date as possible.
No, you've got to tell me when Wilco's closes, Han.
I know. I do. It's funny. I do sometimes feel like you two know more than me about what's going on here sometimes, because I think you two like try to keep.
Hard.
Yeah. And sometimes you tell me things and I'm like, oh, I hadn't heard that on the news. Or
Well, it's like when you'll meet someone from another country and they've done all the touristy things in London. They're like, oh, yeah.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That sounds good.
I only went to Scotland.
What? I've never been to Scotland.
It's a long way.
It's a long way. Like a 5 hour drive or something, isn't it? 6 hour drive.
No, maybe a bit more for Hannah.
Why? Because she drives slow.
No, she lives further south.
Oh, right. I was going to say, that was a bit of a strange dig. I wasn't aware of her driving slow.
It'll take her a while to get there. All the stops, that bladder.
I remember before we moved here, quite a few people asked us, so are you moving there forever then? Mm. Are you never coming back? Like, well, no, this is just what we want to do now. Like, this is what suits our life now. And if it stops suiting our life to live here, then we'll move somewhere else. You know, whether we might move back to England one day, we might move to France one day. I don't know. Like, this is...
Yeah.
It's so hard to say, is that forever? Especially, like, you know, in your early 30s, when you're making a decision like that, you're like, I don't think you can ever answer that unless you're like 90. Like, yeah, I think I'm probably staying here forever now, you know?
Yeah. Can you possibly say? And do you know what? I remember talking to you about that. You guys had made the decision to move, and Brian and I were talking about it. So, because.
Sorry, I thought you said Brian. I was like, who's Brian?
Brian. Brian from the Backstreet Boys, who I thought I would marry. Yeah, well, you're a year ahead of me, almost exactly.
Mm.
And Ryan and I were having those discussions, and I remember coming to you, and it was one of those Saturday afternoons where I would come over to your house and you would be like, well, I have to clean the bathroom, so you can come over and chat if you want. So you'd clean the toilet and I'd be sitting in the kitchen And I remember saying to you, like, how do you, because the discussions that we were having and what Ryan was struggling with was he knew he wanted to come back here, but he also knew that that was such a huge thing. He felt like that was, he was asking that of me, and he didn't want to ask that of me because he didn't, it was just too much to expect of me. And his problem was, I know I don't want to be in England right now. So how can I ask something of you that right now I'm not prepared to do? But with the other way around. So I remember coming to you and saying, how did you reconcile this? Because somebody is always going to be missing out. Somebody is always going to be locked far away from family. Somebody is always going to be the foreigner. And everything you just said was kind of what you said back then. You were like, we just don't have a forever label on it. We've always said, or for a long time, we've said we want to live in Australia for some period of our life together. That period, we want it to be now. That's all we know. And that really helped me, and it still helps me now, thinking of it like that. Like, it's a chapter. I don't know how long the chapter is.
Well, that's good that I haven't changed my tune. That's consistent of me. Yeah, I mean, forever is impossible to get your head around, isn't it? So what about you then, Emily?
Well, when I met him, I nearly didn't pursue anything because one of the first questions I asked him was, do you think you'll ever move back to the States? And he was like, what do you mean move back? He never saw himself as living in the UK.
Oh, okay.
And I remember talking to Steph about it and saying, like, I don't even pursue anything here because I know I'm never going to want to live abroad. This is just going to be a waste of time, isn't it? And it was her that said, but you don't know that. You don't know that you won't ever want to. And I was like, yeah, I do, because I've never wanted to. I still don't really. Like, when I meet other people who have, but even I think about you, Gal, I think, God, that's so scary.
You did the same thing.
But yeah, I know, but I never wanted to travel. I went to university 90 minutes and came home every week. I never, ever wanted to live abroad. I've never had that. Mm. And I remember you and I sitting in your bedroom and you being like, oh, don't you think it's exciting to think you could go anywhere in the world and you never know what's going to happen next? And I'm like, no, not exciting at all. That's horrible. So I was like, what am I doing with this guy? And she was like, well, it's a very, very early days. You don't know how the two of you are going to progress. And it might, you don't know how your relationship will also change how you feel about things like that. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And then now here we are. But so I can't even remember when the conversations begun about us moving here. It's weird, isn't it? It's one thing I don't have very clear memories of.
Oh,
I think that I probably always kind of reference it. Oh, yeah, maybe one day we'll get there. And it was 2016. It was spring. Season was coming to an end. He'd been looking for a job to stay in the UK, but he was having no luck. We had this conversation. We were in my car, and it all came out. He was like, I want to go home. That's where I need to be right now. He'd moved to the UK. 2008, his younger sister was probably 16. He wasn't around for her whole like high school education, and he was just ready. And it was something like, I didn't need him to put it into words because I knew what he was trying to say, but he was just ready. It was time. And that's when he said, but how can I ask something of you? I'm not prepared to do the other way around. And I thought, well, if we are serious about being together forever, like we talked about getting engaged, and I said, if those are the kind of plans that we're making, there are going to be times in our life where we do things because it's the right thing for you, and there are going to be times in life that we do them because they're the right thing for me. And that's what a relationship is. It's what a marriage is. It's not always going to be 50-50 all the time. There's going to be times in our life where we have to prioritize your needs over mine and vice versa. And then eventually there'll be times, hopefully, where we prioritize our kids' needs over ours. And it's never going to be a straight, even cut.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is just one of those periods where we got to prioritize you. And I wasn't saying that as something like, it's just, that's how I felt in that moment. Like, this is what you need. and I know that we need each other, then this is the right thing to do, isn't it? So from there, we got back onto the practicals, which is where he's comfortable. So let's go and speak to an immigration lawyer, just understand our options. And then, to cut a long story short, she was like, you really just need to get married. Mm-hmm. And we found out that if we applied for a green card for me while Ryan was still a UK resident, that would fast track us, it would put us on this speedy process, and it would cut down the whole immigration process. So on paper, that sounded smart. But at the time, it was July the 4th, and his residency expired on August the 31st.
Uh-oh.
So we'd gone from, let's just go see this lawyer today, weigh up our options, to we got to get married in, I think it was 7 weeks. In the beginning. And we sat in prep. We just stared at each other, and we're like, did we just get engaged? It was the least, most unromantic moment of our whole relationship. So yeah, as you guys know, we decided to do that. But I guess in the end, it was like a bit of a whirlwind, really, in terms of making the decision, because in less than 2 months, we'd gone from, let's go see what our options are, maybe we'll move to the States, to I had a green card application in process and we were married. It was just whirlwind and dramatic, yeah. Which I don't know, neither of us were really expecting, and we nearly didn't do it. We were both very upset at the thought of our engagement being completely clouded by all this admin. There was nothing magical about it. We felt like we were being robbed of that proposal and that moment of realization that I found my person. So we made an agreement with each other that we'd book it all, but we wouldn't walk in that room without having had a proposal and an engagement ring, which is why the engagement in the end technically was a surprise. And I remember talking to you guys, and I was like, guys, it's just not going to propose. I don't understand. Like, why hasn't he done it yet? And what you were like, yeah, maybe he's just not ready. We're getting married in 3 weeks. So yeah, so then we had a year apart when he moved back to the States, and I
moved in with me.
Stayed in the UK, lived with Hannah and Fez and the kids and the cats and the dog and the chickens and the fish, and we had the best summer of our lives.
We'll come on to that, because that's, yeah, that is the story, isn't it?
But I don't ever, so for me it was never a, like you talked about the adventure, Gail, and the thought of the adventure, like that. For me it was never, ever about that. It was just, I think this is something that I need to do for my family.
So selfless of you.
Yeah, I'm a really nice person.
Yeah, that takes an immense courage.
It does, yeah.
To do something that you didn't have, like, that excitement and thrill about it behind you to spur you on.
People were so excited. Not really. I'm terrified, but I know that I'm more terrified about the thought of, I know we're meant to be together. I know he's my person, and I know that, I guess this is where I'm supposed to be, because that's where he's supposed to be. And now that I'm here, like, I will say the first 6 months was awful. It wasn't an awful life. It was just beyond hard. And I just wanted to come home. I could barely even, like, I couldn't even talk to my brother.
Yeah.
It was, when people talk about homesickness, it really is a sickness. There's a really good book. I think you've read it, Gail. We've talked about it before. It's called Brooklyn, I think, and it's about it's also a film. It's about a girl who moves from Ireland,
Irish girl,
to
yes,
New York, and the way that she depicts homesickness is it's incredible, because it really is. And I was really unwell for a while, and I got a job pretty quickly, which was what I wanted, because I wanted instant social life to a degree, but the job wasn't the right job, and I had a bit of a breakdown, and then changed jobs, stayed in the same place, but changed jobs, and that changed massively. But yeah, just those first 6 months of, it was just the perfect storm. I was miserable, but I got into therapy pretty quickly. But I never questioned, like, did I do the right thing? I just had underestimated how painful it would be. But now, nearly 7 years in, and I don't regret it at all. We've got a really, I love our life here. You know, we had both our kids here, and this is their home. I don't know if you had this, girl, but like when the kids were born, it was almost like I felt a root sprout. Like, okay, I've got more of a permanent tether here now because this is where their home is, and obviously my home is them.
What? How did you find it, Em, that year when Rylan went?
The day he left was awful, but he left and I moved in with you. So yeah, that helped hugely because it was like as soon as he left, I could just focus on that. It was exciting.
It was amazing in the sense like we never did that thing of living together as friends. You know, we never did that, and suddenly here we were in our 30s.
Yeah, in a stage of life where you're not normally moving in with girlfriends.
Yeah, you think that ship has sailed.
It was funny because I remember the process of us trying to make the decision was just laughable because we were like, is this the right thing to do? Is this going to, you know, challenge our friendship? Or, you know, we're going to be money and friendship can make things weird. And Fred's was, I remember, literally in the background of the phone call going, are you guys still talking about this?
When is she moving in? It was a really interesting year, wasn't it? Because you didn't have a job. You did have a job. You had lost your job. And Fez at that point had a very difficult situation at work and was out of work just before the summer, and then obviously had the summer holidays as a teacher. And I had just had Molly, so I was on maternity leave. So here we were, the three of us, just at home. I think our neighbours must have just wondered what on earth was going on. Like, who are these people living here? Why did none of them work?
What is this weird setup they've got?
Two women and
who's married to who?
Three kids and there's this new baby that's come and whose is it? And it was quite interesting because you and Fez actually spent quite a bit of time together. You two being a bit more free than me, nursing a newborn baby. And actually you ended up going on like a few dates and things, didn't you? You went to the opera together.
We went to the opera.
he used to come with you to sign on, didn't he? And sort of take it as a day trip to wander around.
He did. Because it was in Aldershot and it was a shithole. So he was like, you're welcome.
So what, not including people, what is the thing that you both miss the most about the UK?
I miss, obviously the people we miss the most, but the people are also the thing that's the easiest to stay connected to. I miss TV. I miss being in the loop on UK pop culture. I also miss things like the landscape. I miss seeing trees and post boxes and English churches, and I really miss Sainsbury's.
Lipook Sainsbury's is quite special to us all.
Lipook Sainsbury's specifically, and again, I think it's just synonymous with that year that we spent together. But there's just something so comforting and wholesome about pushing a trolley around Sainsbury's
in the winter here. I really miss England. I don't like winters here. I miss like cozy front rooms with a roaring fire and central heating. So that's weird, isn't it?
Like, miss English weather.
The feeling of like moving to Australia, the thing I miss is being warm in the winter. Like, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
When you meet people and obviously they learn that you're British, how do people respond to that?
Honestly, people do not bat an eyelid. And never ask me other than to say, oh, whereabouts? All right, yeah, my auntie lives in such and such. So many people here are British, or the parents are British, or the grandma was British. It's just, honestly, people, it's not interesting to anybody. I hardly ever get asked about it.
So does that ever bother you then? Does that ever bother you that you're not...
I'm not interesting. Yeah. You're not special.
No, I'm not exotic. Not special.
Are you treated as a bit more exotic where you are?
Yeah, and sometimes it's funny because I, every time I meet someone new, it goes in this order. Oh, I love your accent. how did you end up in the States? What do you think about Meghan?
Really?
Or the royals in general. Yeah, in that order. And the accent thing is weird to me because it's not like something it's not a skill. It's not like when someone says, oh, I love your shoes. Like, I didn't choose it. It's just my voice. And it's a lot of people think I'm Australian, funnily enough. I had it the other day. But I have to say, I do consider my Britishness as a big part of my identity. And so I do enjoy, like, I joke about it all the time. Like, I don't know, I'll say something and be like, oh, you're talking to a Brit here. Like you're asking me, I'm British. We're always sarcastic. You know, that I use it as like a source of humour. Mm-hmm. Friend at work was asking me about English money. Actually, she was like, you're English. What's tuppence? I was like, tuppence are bad.
2 pence.
And then I had to go through this whole thing of like, tuppence, but it's not a thing anymore. It's old money. What's old money? Like, well, it's really old. Like, then we got onto the subject of English notes in my purse. And I thought, oh, here's some English money. So we got into a discussion about that. So that it's kind of fun sometimes.
I remember finding it funny, like, I've happened to a few times that if you're at someone's house for dinner or something, and after dinner they'd be like, Gail, can I get you a cup of tea? And I'm like, no, I'm all right with my wine, thanks. But you're English. I thought you would want tea after dinner.
I am a cliche because I have every morning when I leave the house, I have a big, big insulated cup of tea, giant one. I have it on the go all day. That is a British stereotype that I do live up to.
So I did actually get picked up on my English accent the other day. I just remembered one of my friends, I said bottle of wine. She was like, oh, bottle. So English.
The thing that makes me laugh when I say, you're right? And they'll go,
you're right, yeah.
I'm all right, yeah, why? Why do I look like I'm not right? I'm like, oh, yeah, this is so.
See, I've stopped saying that now.
It's just how we say hi. Do you think anything has suffered or been impacted in a negative way by moving abroad?
Well, yeah, I feel like I miss out on a lot with my friendships. With you guys, like, I know we speak when we can, but I feel like miss out on, you know, getting to know Janie and Alice and spending time with your families. And
yeah, that is hard.
And my other close friends who you all know, like, I, you know, don't get to speak to them and see them as often as I would like. Can you miss out on birthdays and get-togethers and all that? Not being in the loop in people's lives, because it's hard. If you're not seeing someone face-to-face on a regular basis, it is hard to stay up with that stuff.
Well, I think so. There are definitely friendships that have been impacted by me not living in the country anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not because those friendships aren't important or special or real. It's just they need different conditions in which to thrive. Some friendships are about the here and now. They are, the magic happens when you're in the same room, experiencing things, making memories, and physically in each other's space, interacting.
Mm-hmm.
Some, the magic happens on the phone or just with words or with, and some are so, I think some like plants almost, like some friendships are so hardy that they don't need any maintenance. Hannah, if you're comfortable talking about it, I'd like to hear from your perspective. When Gail and I, because we were on a similar time frame, so a year apart, so we're going through these processes of deciding with our partners what to do and where to move and whether to move. What process were you going through concurrently?
It was different for both of you, I think. It was because with Gail, it was more of like, you know, you guys had come to this decision and obviously there was all this excitement behind it, and, you know, as well as all the, you know, the emotion and the worry and all of that. It was, you know, as you said before, it was exciting. It's this adventure, you know, you were going to go traveling, and, you know, and the only way to respond to that is obviously with, you know, with excitement too, you know, for all the things that you were going to do. I think with you, Em, it was different because you know it was very much a sort of having these conversations, and, you know, you were speaking to me as well, you know, like trying to get advice about, you know, like, you know, what should I do, and you know, weighing up all the pros and cons and everything. And I made a conscious decision with both of you. I would never say anything negative in a way, like from a personal point of view. You know, I would like listen to, you know, your worries and concerns about it and respond to that, but I would never from my perspective say anything negative. And I did all that talking with Fez. So I would, you know, I'd have these chats with you. I did do it. Yes. Never with you guys. Because I just sort of, I just felt that there was so much that you were going through anyway. And I didn't feel like you needed any more.
Did that make you feel unsupported though?
I felt very supported by Fez. I think I was really able to I was chatting very openly with him about it, and I would, you know, come off the phone or come away from seeing you or something and you know, just sort of recount the conversation to him, and then it sounds awful because it's not that I was trying to hide anything from you, but it's like how I was actually feeling that it was all coming out with him. And it just, it felt like when, you know, like Gelfer, when you left it, you know, like, I mean, it's a phrase, isn't it? It literally did feel like losing a limb. It felt like such a massive part was missing. And then when you went as well, it felt like another limb. And it was, I'm not good at talking when I'm crying. My voice goes all high.
Let's remember we're also making you do this when you have a hangover, so that doesn't help, does it?
I know, I'm very over emotional anyway.
It was really hard. It was really hard. I can't say that it wasn't.
And it felt like it was a grieving period. It felt like a massive loss. And I remember at your wedding, I remember thinking, like, just God, nobody asked me anything. Just, you know, I was, you know, like anyone who was sort of talking about, you know, I was being really positive. I was, you know, and it was obviously a lovely wedding. We were having drinks and, you know, and it was all positive, positive, positive. And then it was Beth who I was sat with, and she just said, how are you feeling about this? You know, Gail's already gone, and you know, so I know you were back at that time, but you know, and then you were due to go a few days. It was a few days, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I started off, you know, as I always did, sort of going, oh, you know, it's so great. Gail's having all these adventures, and Em's, you know, Em's made a decision, and you know, they're all sorted, and you know, and then I just stopped, and it came out, I just broke down, and I didn't want anyone to see me there crying, but it all just came out, and I just said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do without them both. And I still sometimes now I get this kind of like almost like this sort of shock, like realization, like, oh my God, they're not, you know, and I get this panic, like, oh my God, they're not here. Mm. But then it's like, it's very short lived because because I know the realities of our friendship, which is that it hasn't changed the friendship. I mean, what it looks different on a day to day basis, but it hasn't changed how any of us feel about each other or about how we, you know, how much we are in each other's lives. I don't think we miss out on anything with the three of us.
Yeah,
we talk, you know, like Gail with you, I mean we talk every single week. We found a really good system of I phone her on the
you ring me basically.
Yeah, on my way to work
you ring me and I answer.
And you answer. But equally, if we don't, you know, if there's times when we don't talk for like 2-3 weeks, it's no difference, and I do believe that we know everything that is going on.
Yeah, I think there is. This comes back to the whole magic spell thing, but
you don't understand
because I can't explain it. I think our lives have always just been so intrinsically linked and so intertwined Like, we couldn't unravel them if we wanted to. You know?
No.
I think I can't explain it. It's like, it's family. But I know. For me, the hardest thing about moving abroad is not the missing people, it's not the practical adjustments, it's knowing that the decision that you've made is hurting people. It's the hardest thing to reconcile, and you never, I don't think I ever will. You know that people don't want you to go, and that's okay. And the irony in it all is the only reason I was able to get on that plane was because the friendship and the relationship is so strong, is so bonded, and is so inherent. It makes it hurt more, but it also makes it easier to do. It's because you know that it's a rock solid foundation that's never going to break. So it's an anchor. And because of that, you can make these difficult decisions. But also because of that, a lot more people get hurt.
And that was something that I think I've got my head around it now. I'm just used to it now. But when I first moved here, it was just that feeling of overwhelming guilt.
Yeah.
Because I knew how many people were so upset at the thought of us going. And that people couldn't really understand, and that's where all the, but are you going forever? Are you never coming back? And that's where all that kind of stuff was coming from. It's like a feeling that people were hurt by it, that it was a, I'm moving away because I don't want to be near you kind of thing. Like, this is the hardest thing I'm ever having to do because I'm making this decision despite the fact I love you so much and I don't want to be apart from any of you.
Yeah,
I still feel compelled to make this decision, and it tears you in two.
I never had any doubt in my mind that you had both made the right decisions, and I think that was such a big part of not talking to you exactly about how I was feeling, because it's just like I didn't disagree with it at all. There was no benefit, you know, to either of you of knowing that, and you know, and also I knew that you knew. You know, it's not like, you know, I wouldn't have sort of said like, oh, I'm really sad that you're going. You'd be like, oh, shit, really?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, I hope that you know that you were part of that thought process. You know, when you look at the scales of the reasons to and reasons not to, like, and I felt like that all the time. Every time I saw my brother in that year leading up to leaving, his kids were, well, Octavia was, well, she was still going by Ava then. She was really young and Reggie wasn't even born yet. And every time I'd leave them, I'd just think, God, what am I doing? Like, why am I leaving these amazing people behind? And then there'd be this little voice of, well, because they're not your kids.
Yeah.
You can't completely change the trajectory of your own life for them because they're not.
No, you can't.
And even my grandma was like, you've got to do this for you.
Mm.
And I'd only really fairly recently reconnected with her.
And that's wisdom, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, especially coming from someone who had lost everyone, really.
Oh, heavy.
Say the word beaver, it might help, Han.
Hello?
Whose child was that?
I thought it was yours.
That's Molly.
That's Molly. Because she said something in the background just as my earpod died. And I could hear this little child's voice. I was like, oh my God, what's happened to my earpods? It's like one of the girls started sounding like a child. It creeped me out. And no one was responding. Hello? Hi, Molly.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Molly.
Hello.